Live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications Headquarters, you're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
All right, gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Mountaintop Podcast. My name is Scott McKay, at Scott McKay on Twitter, at Scott McKay on Parler, Real Scott McKay on Instagram, Scott McKay on YouTube, and you can find us on the web at mountaintoppodcast.com. If you haven't joined the Facebook group yet, there's a thriving group of men who are wanting to be better men and get better women into their lives, and you can find that at the Mountaintop Summit on Facebook. With me today is a new friend of mine. His name is Brian Sharp, a.k.a. Hotep Jesus, and he's quite an impressive guy. I've gotten to know more about him in the last couple of weeks since I first found out about him through an interview he did with none other than Scott Adams of Dilbert fame, which was the rawest, most honest conversation I had heard in months. And I said to myself, I want to find out more about this guy and get him on board. And he's a serial entrepreneur. He's done marketing for some very high-level people. And he's also a world-class expert on speaking your mind and being authentic, especially as a masculine man who wants to get better with women. So with nothing further, Hotep Jesus, welcome, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Love that intro. I might have to clip that and use that later on for something.
That's not the first time I've heard that. But, you know, I do my homework on you guys before I have you come on board, and nobody likes to listen to a big lengthy bio. So I just kind of give them a brief introduction and highlight what matters and basically let the content take its course. And I'll tell you, I have a little bit of nervous energy because I don't know where this is going to go, but I'm really excited.
Oh, you never know.
Yeah, right. I didn't even make a whole lot of notes. All I know is that you are a deep thinker. You're an independent thinker. You're not letting any mob, any particular movement, any particular echo chamber influence who you are, what you think. And that results in not only intelligent thinking, but intelligent conversation. And in your case, Hotep, some pretty significant accomplishments. I would love for these guys to hear your story a little bit about how you've evolved as a man from where you were as a younger man to where you are now, leading you to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to be a lot more authentic. I'm going to really figure out what I believe and run with it.
Yeah, I'm a lot different than I was as a young man, but so much the same. You know, I've always been this independent thinker. You know, that was profound in my profile. But I made a lot of mistakes, a lot of mistakes. And one day I spoke to my friend Demick. He had this analogy. He called it cliffhanging. He was like, you know, when you're a cliffhanger, you know, it's like one wrong move and, you know, you can fall. But at the end of the day, we're still going and taking that risk. If we fall, we fall, you know, and that always resonated with me. So I just, you know, try to live my life like a cliffhanger. And ever since then, it's just been like, you know, like, you know, what can it hurt? Like you go and try something, like what can it hurt? It can't hurt if you fail. It's just like, you can't fail any worse than you've previously failed. And I've had some really huge mess ups, you know? So it was just about like going out there, taking risks, trying new things. My background is like Scott Adams said about me, I have an interesting skill stack and I do, you know, so I have a computer background. I have a public speaking background. And I got a lot of that experience as being a touring artist. We performed for thousands of people, thousands of crowds. It was crazy, like ridiculous, crazy times on tour. I got stories for days. I sold mortgages, like you said, you know, marketing for high profile people, marketing for startups, for well-funded startups, for weak-funded startups. So, you know, my skill stack is quite interesting. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, I was never afraid to learn something new, you know, like if there was something out there I didn't understand, I just went and looked it up and learned from it. And I always cherished knowledge. And, you know, earlier you mentioned I was a deep thinker, but you said something out there. You said I'm an independent thinker. And I'm like, I think that's definitely more accurate because in order to for anyone to dive into the depths of their mind, they first have to be independent or somewhat independent of an outside world. At the end of the day, our knowledge is dependent upon somebody else because we're reading the books, we're getting it secondhand. So somewhat of that is, but the interpretation of these things, we have to allow to be independent. And I think that's what I spend a lot of time doing is not so much looking at people's opinions and thoughts and facts and taking their rhetoric with it, I'm kind of like filtering that stuff out. Like the opinions about the facts, I filter out when people report on the news. And then I kind of look at it and say, you know, like, you know, what's really happening here? And that allows me to be the guy who I am today, you know, which is why people, I think people know that they're going to get that, you know, when it comes to reading the room, you know, Hotep Jesus and Uncle Hotep are the best. That's why, you know, people love our podcast. We're just the best at it. And I enjoy reading the room.
Yeah, that's important, not only in podcasting, but in stand-up comedy, in marketing, and even making friends with people, for sure. It sounds to me like you're talking about an aspect of yourself where you're very curious. You mm-hmm. wanted to know more. You want to find out more. And that's something that's sorely lacking amongst people in general, even kids who just have their nose buried in their video games all the time, and right. they're giving up a lot. And we talked about that on a recent show, and it sounds like you're one of the few in the crowd who wants to learn as much as you can about anything and everything, right?
Yeah, I pretty much want to know everything before I leave the earth.
you know, it's a tall ask.
It definitely is. You know, my children are 10, and they'll be doing algebra in a few years, so we picked up an algebra book, and, you know, I'm relearning algebra. I'm relearning coding again and learning the new language, JavaScript. And studying history, writing another book. But, you know, like when people say I'm an intellectual, I don't know. You know, I guess that describes me. You know, I guess I would be in that class of people, but I don't look at it like that. I just look at it as I need to know everything. I just have this obsession with needing to know. And it's not everything. Like there's some things that I don't care about, you know, that I just don't care to know. But I think they're the things that I want to know. Once I have that passion to know them, I have to know them in totality, and then I move on to the next thing.
One of the things I'm sure you noticed, because you're active on Twitter, as am I, is that when people haven't thought for themselves
yeah.
and they're confronted mm-hmm. with a challenge to what they've been told to believe, they simply respond with ad hominem outbursts, which is a logical fallacy. I mean, insulting somebody is not an opinion, yet mm-hmm. so many people, when they're faced with someone who votes differently, thinks differently, prays differently, they just call that person an idiot and pile on invective as if that's going to make the argument go away. And to me, that's just a huge sign of someone being more like a sheeple than someone who's thought for themselves independently. And it's just a bad look, yet it's so common.
Yeah, I think that's why you have secret cabals and you have secret groups. And, you know, we have this thing called the silent majority. And, you know, the louder these idiots get, the quieter the smart people in the room will get. And we'll organize in different ways that people will have no idea what's coming when, you know, when we launch the new venture or product or design, right? Like Kanye talks about, you know, it's like, it's not about policy, it's about design, right? And that's what we're trying to do, is like design our life. So, you know, these people, when they sling in the invective comments, anybody that follows me on Twitter knows I'm blocking you like straight off the top. If you're coming in with ad hominems, I'm not even going to question it. You know, it's like you're ruining the conversation.
There is no conversation.
Well, you know, with my Twitter, we're having that conversation. And then you have the naysayers that come in with the ad homs, and it's just like, you're not part of the conversation if we're not talking about the nuances of these topics. And that's the problem. You know, a lot of these topics don't have nuance in them anymore. You're not allowed to discuss the details. You're not allowed to explain your point. But again, you know, feelings don't care about facts. Everybody's got to understand that feelings don't care about facts. So you could spew your facts all day long, but somebody who is living emotionally and thinking emotionally isn't going to care about your facts. So you know, facts aren't to be shared. Facts are to be used. So if we're not using these facts to build something, they're just vanity, and vanity facts are basically more emotion.
And I found that people who follow the herd really don't have a head for nuance. In other words, if you bring up something, even in passing, that they don't agree with, they feel the need just to bury it at a wholesale level and bury you with it. When you may not have even been a supporter of what you brought up, you were simply starting a discussion about it. In other words, if you have any kind of Republican thought, for example, then not only are you a Donald Trump supporter, but you must be a racist and you must be for police brutality. It's like, wait. I've only said 280 characters here on the subject, and you're filling in the gaps for the rest of my character and the rest of my life because of it. And that just doesn't seem too intelligent or too well thought out to me. It just seems like a knee-jerk reaction, which the world has too much of lately, huh?
Such a peculiar problem. One I've been trying to make sense of for some time now, but at the end of the day, the media is running the show. You know, they're going to control public opinion. And, you know, like I said before, you know, people are going to do things in secret because, like, reading the room, right? So when we talk about reading the room, it's like, if I meet somebody in public and, you know, we even delve into topics, it's like, I'm not going to say how I feel about politics until I can gauge if this person is of the media bred variety or the independent thinking variety. Because if they're media bred, then I'm just going to pretend like I'm media bred too. Like, they'd be like, oh yeah, Trump's such an asshole. I'm be like, haha, yeah, he's such an asshole. And like, they mean it in one way and I mean it as in like, I kind of like that he's an asshole, right? I think you have to pick and choose your battles. And also, you know, if people are going to call me an intellectual, I can't have conversations with people who are non-intellectuals.
It just dumbs you down, doesn't it?
I mean, it's going to get us nowhere. It doesn't do anything for me because then I'm the one teaching, right? Like, in order for us to have a conversation, I said this the other day, in order for me to have a conversation with some of these people, I'd first have to educate them on their side of the argument and help them make their argument just so I can make mine, because they don't even understand their side of the argument fully. And I know their side better than they know it, you know? So a lot of times that's how I destroy people's arguments right away, by taking what I know they already know and constructing it so that they have an argument. And then they go, oh yeah, exactly. And I'm like, exactly. Now here's the other side of the argument. And then they're just left there standing, trying to wonder what just happened.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes people don't only not see it coming, they don't know what just happened. Yeah. When you do that.
Yeah. So, you know, I tend not to waste my time with that stuff. I tend to laugh it off and smile and, you know, like my brand says, shut up and code, you know, we trademarked that recently. We've got the shirts coming out again. Shut up and code, man, you know, or shut up and work out, or shut up and build, whatever it is that you do, like, shut up and just do that shit, because today it's too much talk. Talk don't cook rice. That's a chapter in my book on masculinity. Talk don't cook rice. It's a lot
of amazing.
And talking is for women too, you know, like, a lot of men doing too much talking. And it's like, when we talking, like, what are we talking about? You know, are we talking about other men? Are we talking about ideas and events? And
yeah, right.
We can change the world.
Yeah, there's that quote, real men talk about ideas, not other people.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Indeed. And you got a lot of chatty patty dudes out here, you know, Will and Jada have some sort of entanglement problems or whatever the fuck is going on over there. And, well, you know, what about, you got grown men doing podcasts on another man's relationship. It's just like, is this the example we're leaving for our children? Is this is what you want your son to aspire to be, like some celebrity gossip writer? You know, it's just really weird.
When you were talking before, it reminded me of another quote that's attributed to Norman Schwarzkopf. Mm-hmm. If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Oh, indeed.
And if you're talking to people who just can't make sense of their own argument, you're obviously the smartest person in the room at that point, and it's time to find a different room.
Yeah, I'm a hermit. I stay to myself. I stay studied up, but when I go out, I observe and I kind of read the room, because, you know, it's one thing of what reality is on social media. It's another thing, you know, on the streets and how people are feeling. But it's definitely two different worlds. I think that what people don't understand about social media is social media is a glance into the future. You know, some things it's 6 months ahead, some things it's a year ahead, some things it's a couple of years ahead. But whatever you see on social media, people will say, oh, Twitter's not reality or Facebook's not reality. And it's like, it is. It's just not manifested reality yet. It's about to be, right? Like, they're using social media to kind of seed the future of our realities. That's why I say we have to be very careful about the conversations. I tweeted today, I said, have conversations the right and the left aren't having. Because the conversations that they are having are probably not the correct conversations. And that's why they carry these conversations. The majority of the time, the right is just joining a conversation that the left has created.
Well, both the left-leaning media and the right-leaning media are going to focus on stories that benefit their side exclusively, respectively. So what I've noticed, Hotep, is when a story doesn't affect either side politically, or doesn't affect their agenda in any particular way that they perceive as positive, or when it would theoretically hurt both sides of the aisle, they skip it.
Yeah.
A great example of the latter is what you're seeing with Jeffrey Epstein. They're just trying to bury that as
Everybody's
much as they
can. Quiet about that, ain't they?
Right. Because both the Clintons and the Trumps are kind of implicit there, and that is bad for both sides. Whereas there are preposterous things going on in this country, human trafficking, opioid crisis, and neither side really sees a whole lot of political capital there at this point in history. So, you know, let's underreport that and stick to things that are going to help my side look better or make the other side look worse. I mean, what I tell CNN and Fox every day, you know, in my mind, because I read both, and I've noticed that if I hold both of those websites up to the light, the real news will be to some degree what's covered between them. Someone, a friend of mine the other day, said on a related note that I only get my media from unbiased sources. And I'm like thinking to myself, well, that doesn't really exist. And even if you only look at raw headlines from, say, AP, you're missing the nuance of how the left and the right are battling over the territory that is the headspace of America. That is in and of itself part of the news, right?
Indeed. That's why I say, you know, we have to depart from these things and take a step back and look at life in general and come back to the basics. A lot of times, you know, we go wrong in life. Got to come back to the basics, even like with women, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, dudes want to get women. It's just like, yo, what does your body look like, bro? You know, your body alone is like step one in getting hot chicks, right? Like, you can get a hot chick just because you have muscles, and the muscles are the one thing that are acquirable for all men outside of anyone who's happens to be handicapped. And half the time you see handicapped people and they're jacked, right? So, you know, muscles are something that anybody can get. And, you know, if you're having problems with ladies, you come back to the basics, right? Like, mind, body, and soul. Like, get your mind right, get your money right. You're broke. You probably shouldn't want to date, right? You're broke. You definitely don't want to be dating. You need to be stacking your chicken. But this is what I mean. Like, even with the political conversation, it's like, come back to the basics. If we come back to the basics and we just look at body, and it's just like, well, what do the bodies of the United States of America look like? You see, everybody's obese. And it's just like, all right, we're talking about all these problems. We're not talking about, you know, high blood pressure and heart disease and all these other things, but we're talking about these events that happen some of the time, right? And you start to see who is potentially an enemy or potential problems or potential hurdles. And then you can start eliminating these problems, you know, little by little. But a lot of that you'll find is driven by media. So when people say, oh, you know, fast food, da, 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 it's like, well, you know, who's providing the advertising space for that? You know, who's doing that? Like, who's controlling that advertising space? And then when you look at the fast food ties into the body posse movement, right? It's like, it's like body posse so that you can continue to eat fast food or be unhealthy. So eating unhealthy has become popular, you know, in U.S. culture. If you just start at that basic level, you'll understand why people are so easily manipulated.
Yeah. If people would just think one chess move ahead, their lives would be transformed, but people are that lazy and that unintuitive. And you mentioned earlier several things you've mentioned that I really want to follow up on here, but you talked about 10 minutes ago about the silent majority. And indeed, when people are happy, they're not complaining. You know, I talked with a guy I coached a couple of weeks ago, and he mentioned something about women having an axe to grind. And I said, well, you know, if you think about it, where does that particular term come from? What was the etymology of it? Well, a grinding axe is very noisy and grating to your ears. So a grinding axe is inherently noisy. So when people out there are displeased with the status quo for whatever reason, they're going to grab the mic and they're going to chirp about it at high volume in a very shrill manner. And if you're okay with the things that are going on and you're pretty happy, and you don't necessarily have an axe to grind, even if, hey, you know what? You can see where the argument is coming from on the other side of the aisle or whatever, but it just isn't affecting your life as hard as it is theirs. You're not going to say much. You're going to be doing something bigger and better in your own estimation. You got work to do. You got people to see and places to go. Like, for example, Donald Trump is really behind in the polls. I honestly believe, and you can riff on this if you want, that when pollsters call up Republicans, they don't have time for the poll. They're like, no, I don't have time for this. I got something better to do. I don't have any axe to grind with politics right now. It isn't worth my time to even participate in this poll.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. I mean, I saw a Google ad recently. It was like, hey, take this survey about Trump. And I thought the same thing.
Like, who cares?
I said, this is exactly what I said to myself. I said, I don't care enough to take this survey, but I'm sure there's going to be a million Democrats who are going to jump at this opportunity, and a million liberals that are jump at this opportunity to say something bad about the president. So I know the results of this survey are garbage.
Yeah. So you just corroborated what I was suspecting.
Yep.
And that's two of us. I don't know if the rest of the guys listening would be nodding their heads in agreement, but I suspect plenty of them would be. And then, you know, that's how we get different movements or different ideas that take the forefront in the media and end up capturing the imagination of people. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I believe Scott Adams said on your show, and I don't believe it was an original thought to him, he cited someone else as having come up with it, but it's that people tend to overreact in the short term and underreact in the long term. And right now you have a whole lot of people knee jerking to something that's been in the news for like 10 minutes, like defunding the police. Where did this come from? Well, the example that came to mind of the latter, of people underreacting in the long term after having knee-jerked in the short term, is the whole border wall. I mean, that was the top of the headlines a year and a half, 2 years ago. Like, oh my God, Donald Trump is the worst guy ever for wanting to do this border wall. Mm-hmm. And one thing doesn't work to get Trump out of office and to give that voice what they were dying to hear in the moment. It didn't have political expediency, so it's time to move on to the next thing. And that's just fascinating to me because it was absolutely the most important thing to everybody on Twitter for so long. And now it's a nothing burger. Mm-hmm. And that makes you really think, how are we being manipulated? How authentic can we possibly believe ourselves to be when we're being blown and tossed by the whims of the media like that? So to kind of help land this plane here, Hotep, I want you to tell these guys, give them some real practical ideas about how we can, for lack of a better way to put it, man up and allow ourselves to be bolder about what we authentically believe. Because, you know, cancel culture is a real thing. How do we balance all of that as men who want to make a difference in this world, but want to do it from an authentic perspective, even if we're not knee-jerking with the rest of the media at the moment?
Yeah. Well, first of all, nobody cares what you believe, and you shouldn't care. And you shouldn't care what anybody thinks about what you believe. So we got to start there as just a mindset milestone. Like, that's the first milestone, not caring what people think about what you believe. The second part is very simple. The reason why you're not winning this conversation, or you cannot win this conversation, because even if you try, you'll be deemed white supremacist or something like that, right? So you cannot win this conversation. For example, in my book, I say, you know, how to win an argument with a woman is only one way. And it's in my book. But ordinarily, you cannot win an argument with a woman. And we're dealing with female energy when we're looking at this socialist rebellion that we see, quote unquote rebellion, right? So we're looking at female energy. So the problem here isn't the system. The problem here is you. Male, man, human, you are the problem. You allowed your living room to get messy. So now it's time to clean up. The problem is you don't have the resources to clean up. So the first thing you need to clean up is your own household. Get your own family in order. If you can't change your family, how are you going to change the world? So you got to get your family in order. This is why Black Lives Matter comes after the nuclear family. Get your family in order. After we get our family in order, that's the time to go and see some real power in America, some real financial power, some real technological power, some real estate power, some legal power, right? And then once you have the power, you start flexing your muscles, and now you have an army that you can mobilize to spread what you believe. You see, talking on Twitter about what you believe is one thing. Being able to march an army out to push your agenda. You know, George Soros paid $30 million to Black Lives Matter. He can have them marching out there for their ideology all day long if he wanted to. When are you going to be able to mobilize that? we're going to mobilize that? What is the audience? What are the listeners? What are you going to do? How are you going to mobilize? How are you going to combat this thing? How are you going to insulate your family, your progeny, your wife, your kids, everybody? You know, how do you insulate them? How do you insulate them from this Marxist regime that keeps tightening its grip around Lady Liberty's neck? How are you going to insulate your family from it? Maybe you don't affect the world and affect change, but how do you make sure your family's not affected by this stuff? Are you going to Wyoming like, yay? What's happening here? And I think that's the real conversation, how to make that shit happen.
Well, as a man, you need to walk your talk and live that example before you expect anybody to follow, because women inherently follow a man's lead. And if you're not giving anything attractive to follow, if you're not acting in the best interests of your family unit, women aren't going to follow, and your kids aren't going to respect you, and neither is your wife. You mentioned that Black Lives Matter is coming for the nuclear family. That is actually written in their mission purpose statement, and it's something that a lot of people don't realize because it's not talked about much in the media. In your opinion, why would Black Lives Matter not acknowledge Black fathers and not acknowledge the need for a strong family unit in the African American community? What's going on there?
Well, that would mean that the founders have some sort of personal animosity towards men. Maybe the men in their lives have not done their job and have been a huge disappointment to them. And usually hurt people. So now they want to spread their ideology to the rest of us. But again, when you're funded by Marxists and socialists and communists, you're going to have that type of agenda that attacks the family, that comes straight for the head of the household, the man. You're going to have things like that happen naturally, because that's just how their agenda is set up. It's very much a virus. You know, it's a program that gets inside the national body and causes some sort of autoimmune disease where the body is now attacking itself. That's what socialism and communism is. It's like this thing that triggers an autoimmune disease, and now Americans are fighting Americans. And as we see every single day, you know, and part of that was installing a left-right dynamic, this or that dynamic, to truly divide people. And keeping it at that limit at 2, because 3 would mean there's too much free thinking happening. You know.
Well, you and I were talking before we hit record here about Black Lives Matter and about what's going on right now in the world. And it seems that Black Lives Matter, to me, has taken a page out of feminism. And for years, I just thought feminism had a branding problem. Because, you know, all of us want women to get equal pay and be able to vote and have equal rights.
You know, the problem isn't there, what their gripe is, right? Like, there's people that have all types of gripes, right?
Right.
The thing is, socialists prey on the weak. So they go to the people, and this is where Republicans mess up and conservatives mess up sometimes, because the weak, after they've been shunned and ostracized from society, it is the socialists who go in and say, hey, I'll help you out. And then they fund these people and they mobilize them and they give them, you know, these things. And then next thing you know, they have an army. Right. And it's always those people who have been ignored. Right. So women, at the time of the women's suffrage movement, women were being ignored. They were like, legislatively, women couldn't do certain things. It's against the law. You'd lock a woman up. It's just like really weird. I don't know what was going on back then. But yeah, you know, like certain things women couldn't do. So women naturally rebelled. And who was there to take on and help their and nurse their rebellion? The socialists, right? Instead of getting ahead of your problem and saying, all right, well, what's the problem, lady? You know, come here. Let me help you out. Here's 20K. Like whatever it is, right? Or here's some laws. Like, hey, we'll free this shit up. But you allowed the problem to get so big that the socialists preyed on it. And if you look at Black Lives Matter, they name all these groups that are just, you know, super minorities, you know, like the LGBT community is and run the gamut on all those letters. Like all of those are super minorities. Each individual group under that rainbow flag is a super minority. So that's who the Marxists prey on, the super minority, and they mobilize them against the majority. And like I said, it's like an autoimmune disease. You know, you got this virus that sneaks in and it preys on something that's got a weakness in your system, you know, and that's the thing about viruses. When your system is running like it's supposed to, the virus can't do anything. It needs to find something wrong in order to feast on. And as long as America doesn't treat certain groups of people right, or groups are, you know, quote unquote, oppressed or whatever, socialists will have some, always have somebody to prey on. And right now, the black community has been preyed upon by the socialists. And that's why you see the leader of Black Lives Matter openly come out and say she's a Marxist. But the, you know, the communists have always latched onto the black community. You know, as I sit here, I have this book on my desk, which I'll be referencing in my new book coming up. But this one here is Color, Communism, and Common Sense by Manning Johnson, Archibald B. Roosevelt, I believe, did the editing. But yeah, Manning Johnson was a black guy who was preyed upon by the Communist Party. You know, they go after super minorities and, or minorities and help them out.
I don't hear a whole lot of talk about Martin Luther King by Black Lives Matter or by anybody else nowadays. It almost seems like his message is sort of quaint vis-a-vis what's going on now and the need to really assert that Black Lives Matter vis-a-vis this perception that just about everybody else is a white supremacist these days.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why. What was so special about Martin Luther King Jr.?
Well, Martin Luther King's message, of course, which was revolutionary in its day, is that we're not going to judge someone by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
But everybody knew that, though.
Yeah. And I think everybody also believes Black Lives Matter. And I think everybody also is 100% sure they don't want police brutalizing people of color. We can all agree on that. But it seems like that's not enough for the mob. That's not enough for the movement, because if everybody agrees with what the movement stands for, then we don't have a movement anymore. We have total agreement, and there's got to be something else out there to fight for. And just like feminists got the right to vote, then all of a sudden we need something bigger and better to shoot for. So men are bad people. We need to call masculinity toxic. And at the same time, we need to be the ones who are in power. We need to be the ones who are making more money, and men just need to sit down and shut up.
Well, let me help you out with this. First of all, sure. The civil rights movement of the 50s is damn near identical to Black Lives Matter. They're both Marxist run organizations seeking to divide America. And they both do a really good job at that. The civil rights movement was an integrationist movement, and black people didn't ask for that. Black people didn't ask for that integrationist movement. That's something that's very Marxist in nature, to force your way inside somebody else's building, so on and so forth, and into their system. That was an integrationist movement. And that's what this Black Lives Matter thing is. It's an integrationist movement. It's all about assimilation. How do we assimilate black people into this society? And they're actually against nation building. They say it on their website that they're against, you know, black nationalism. And that's really what is needed, right? So when people mention MLK, I always wonder, why don't they mention Marcus Garvey? You know, everybody knows MLK. Nobody speaks about Garvey. It's because Garvey was a black nationalist. Martin Luther King Jr. was a great speaker. He was a great speaker, a great organizer maybe. But, you know, I don't see anything special, not to take anything away from his legacy, but from what I've seen, I don't see. I mean, MLK is a special individual. In order to have his name last throughout time, he had to be special. He had to be different from everybody else. You know, certain people are special, but, you know, as far as what they do, you know, what's so special about it, I never understood what was so special about what MLK did, especially for black people. It seemed like he just wanted to date white women.
Well, I mean, certainly there's a lot of name recognition there.
Absolutely.
And that certainly is the message that most Americans, be they people of color or white folks, that's the name most closely associated in our minds with the civil rights movement. Of course, they were all players on both sides. I mean, you had your Medgar Evers's of the world, and then you had your George Wallace's of the world. You had heroes and villains. And, you know, all of us go through Black History Month in school, but I'm not sure we dig deep enough to understand what really happened there. And that goes for a lot of moments in history. We don't learn from them, therefore we're doomed to repeat them. And however you feel about the statues or whatever right now, we have to understand what happened. I mean, I think for my part, this is going to sound rather radical, but I think everybody should go figure out what happened in Rwanda. What led to the Hutus slaughtering the Tutsis? And why did America care more about Kosovo than what was going on in Rwanda?
If you look at why the Black Panther Party had problems, or if you look at why Bloods and Crips became at odds, it's the same problem with the Tutsis. You have some sort of organization that has outside interference, you know, i.e. FBI, and they cause division. That's what they do. They did the same thing with the Zulu tribe when the colonizers came to South Africa. The Zulu tribe is now split into 13 different individual tribes, and they're warring amongst themselves. It wasn't always like that. It's called divide and conquer. That's, you know, it's the same game plan across the globe. It's just different people.
Yeah, history repeats itself over and over. Even if you go into Iraq, the British colonized Iraq and purposely combined three separate ethnic groups with a national identity into one country, specifically to weaken them all. And now you have them all, you know, the Kurds, for example, trying to regain some sense of nationalism because of their culture. And it's because someone came and imposed that on them for the exact same purposes. I mean, you look at what happened in Cambodia. Pol Pot rose to power after the Vietnam War was over because people were like, hey, this sucks and we need change. And Pol Pot said, hey, I'll change everything up for you. And infamously, he slaughtered 1/3 of the Cambodian population. So just because something seems like it sucks, when someone comes in and says, hey, I got change for you, that doesn't mean the change is going to be any better. It could be a lot worse.
Uh-huh.
All these are historical lessons we've got to understand.
Uh-huh.
One of the things you said earlier was how people kind of get into their own mindset, into their own echo chamber, and kind of stay there. And social media allows us to perhaps get a window into what the future is going to look like in terms of how thought is evolving. That's also a lot of people there really because they like to stir up a fight and there's something wrong in their head. I mean, at least from political Twitter's perspective. And one thing I've noticed, Hotep, and I think this would be a great way to kind of tie up this show, is that most people, when they don't understand something, they fear it. And when they fear something, they hate it. And that's what creates all these psychological divides between classes, between races, between ethnicities, nationalities. And yet, one of the greatest cures for getting oneself into that trap is to go hang out with other people. A lot of men are not spending a lot of time with women. Therefore, they're left to their own devices thinking about what these women are like and how different they are and how perhaps adversarial they are. And that creates that sense of confusion and then disdain and then bitterness towards women. And I think that is also the seed of racism. It's the seed of any kind of arrogance one group of people would feel towards the other. In my life, the more I hang out with women, the more I realize women are exactly like me. The more I hang out with Black folks or Asian folks or Jewish folks, the more I realize, you know, we're all human here. We all have a common DNA. And all of the fire and brimstone and all of the ugliness and all the difference of opinion, all the assertions made about what an entire group of people might believe and what they may be like, it's easy for us to say, hey, look, you know, you're accusing all of us who identify like I do as being a certain way. And I know that's not true. But are we also willing to go look at the people who aren't like us, spend more time with them and say, hey, look, here's what these people are like in real life. You know, we world school our kids, and I took my kids to the Arab Peninsula. And this was at the height of American negative feeling towards Muslim folks. And my son looked at me, 8 years old, and said, Dad, why do Americans hate Muslim folks so much? These people are being really nice to us. So it all comes down to what the media is telling you about what a certain country is like or a certain group of people is like. There's an agenda there. We have propaganda just like North Korea does. Fortunately for us right now, we have two parties worth of propaganda and you can choose. If it ever comes to a one-party state around here, God help us. But getting out and meeting other people takes that boldness. It takes that curiosity. It takes that strength, that masculine courage to go and do, because we've been told by other people a message that is scary to do that. And it may not end well for you, but that's what I've found.
Yeah. You know, with women, it's, you treat it like a friend, you know? I think there's a difference between being honest with a woman and disclosing too much information. You know, you can be honest, you know, It just matters how much information are you disclosing when you're being honest, right? I think a lot of the men that have this disdain towards women are basically nice guys who finished last. And, you know, you treat this woman nice and you think you're doing all the right things. And then all of a sudden she loses interest or she cheats on you or some shit like that, right? And now you're like, oh my God, women are shit. It's like, technically you've destroyed human nature. You know, human nature says we treasure, what we lack. It's a thing called rarity. Right. So if you don't practice even on your friends, right, you hang out at your friend's house. So there's, you know, the first time you see your friend is like, hey, bro, I haven't seen you in a long time. Spend a night at his house. The next morning, he's like, yo, what's up, bro? Third day, fourth day, get to the last day. He's kind of like, kind of wishes you weren't around sometimes. Right. It's the same thing with women. You know, like men don't know how to create that ebb and flow of to be present and to be gone at the same time. And this is a balancing act that we have to have with all human beings. Otherwise, you destroy your value. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. So when you're this nice guy, you're always doing nice things, da, 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 man, you are for, unless you have the right type of woman, because there's a type of woman that you can do that with. But if it's not that type, you're probably screwed. You know, you're better off treating it like a pimp.
Well, I mean, being Mr. Nice Guy just flat out straight up isn't very authentic in the eyes of most women. You know, they'd rather you just tell her who the hell you are, what your intentions are, and do it in a way that sure makes her feel safe and comfortable around you. Like, you know, you're a watchdog, not an attack dog. You should want to get to know her and see where it goes. And a guy who's just simply trying to get in a woman's pants is just as bad as a woman who's trying to attract a rich guy.
You shouldn't even want to get to know them.
Well, you and I might differ on that one. I like women. I like getting to know them. But anytime that you're trying to push an agenda on a woman rather than just seeing where it goes, certainly she's going to say, well, this isn't leadership. This is a guy who's already pre-approved me.
I think this is more about what happens organically. You know, I always say the destroyer of all relationships are expectations, right? And expectations and intentions just say such a space for human flow instead of to be. If someone's going to grab your interest, you can't help that, right? It's not like you have to make a decision like, yes, this person has captured my interest. I think I believe it. Nah, you know, when you're interested and somebody's an interesting person, I think it's very important to, like I said, just treat women like how you would treat one of the homies. Then you'll have better relationships. But it's like, it's not when you hang out with the homie, you're not like, hey, I want to get to know you.
Maybe we're taking ourselves a little too literally here. No, I don't think you walk up to a woman and say, I've already pre-selected
I'm painting this for a 20-year-old kid who knows nothing. Like me and you, the guys, there's a lot of nuance in this conversation that a 20-year-old might not pick up. He'll take literal, right?
So yes.
I'm trying to dumb it down to the most basic level for these guys because some people need that. They need that frankness. But you know, you and I, we're mature. We're definitely interested in getting to know people and all of that. But I think the difference between you and I is we know who we are. These young guys don't know who they are. And you can't know what you want in a person until you know what you want in yourself. And that's really the root of all this. Like, how well do you know yourself? And like they say, the frontal cortex doesn't form till the age 25. So these guys below 25 who are lost and trying to find themselves is very much biological and they need to know that. But, you know, I like being frank and upfront that when you're dealing with women, you definitely need to have a I don't give a fuck attitude. It's very much like winging it.
Well, kind of separating yourself from outcome dependency, right? I'll tell you, you just talked about is the foundation of this entire show, which is know who the hell you are before you do anything else. And you talked about that in terms of getting your own house in order, getting your own relationships in order. And I think that's very much tied to having a firm sense of identity. It's like I've always said, Hotep, you know, if I could just take these 22-year-old guys, unscrew their craniums and pour in everything that older men know and how they act, then older guys would stop getting all their women and they would go get all those younger women.
That's true.
That's about as factual as it gets. That's real.
Yeah. Cause
anyway, his name is Brian Sharp, AKA Hotep Jesus. I want you guys to go to mountaintoppodcast.com/Hotep, Hotep, where you will find Brian's website full of all kinds of wisdom on all sorts of topics, and you're going to be amazed. Get on his newsletter, too. It's one of the best that I've ever gotten on. He sends information every day that will surprise you with how valuable it is. And I've also set up links to two of his books on Amazon from my Amazon influencer page, which is at mountaintoppodcast.com/Amazon. The first is on Twitter marketing, how to build a cult-like following, which is an interesting idea. And probably more pertinent to this show, the Unbreakable Rules of Masculinity by Hotep Jesus. And you will find both of those on the Amazon influencer page. Brian Hotep Jesus Sharp, man. Welcome to the world of Mountaintop Podcast. I am glad you came here today. It's been a fascinating conversation, a different one than we've ever had. Thanks, man.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you too, man. And guys, if you haven't been to mountaintoppodcast.com, go there and pay a visit to the supporters of this show, Origin in Maine, which is the company founded by Jocko Willink and a couple other really good dudes, is back in the saddle producing their factory jeans, which are the best pair of jeans I have ever owned. Not only do they make you look good, they feel good, and you can actually be active in them and won't look like a douche wearing them. I mean, what more could you ask? They have a special running where you get two pair for a special price. If you enter Mountain 10, when you go to mountaintoppodcast.com/origin, you'll be able to get an additional 10% off. And those guys in Origin, Maine are making everything in the United States. And they're flying the stars and stripes proudly, and it is an excellent company to support, run by real men for real men. Similarly, go to Hero Soap and get you the Hero Bundle, which includes everything to smell great, feel great, and it won't estrogenize you with all those parabens and crazy chemicals. Go visit Hero Soap at mountaintoppodcast.com/Hero Soap and get you some. And finally, don't forget the guys at Keyport. If you do not have an everyday carry device by now, you should. It makes you Johnny on the freaking spot every time something goes down where we need a real man to take action and get stuff done. And it fits in your pocket, and it is the 21st century version of your grandfather's pocket knife, which means it's better in every conceivable technological way. Last but not least, if you have not talked to me yet for 25 minutes, click that upper right-hand button at mountaintoppodcast.com, and we'll get on the phone, talk about where you are right now, where you want to be, get better women in your life, maybe even improve your career, and get you on the road to accomplishing more of your dreams, be that with women or in life in general. It's all there for you at mountaintoppodcast.com. And until I talk to you again real soon, this is Scott McKay from X and Y Communications in San Antonio, Texas. Be good out there.
The Mountaintop Podcast is produced by X and Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the free X and Y Communications newsletter for men. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.